And welcome to Crackpot Theories, the podcast where everything's plausible until proven otherwise. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Sirka.
And I do believe congratulations are in order, Sirka.
Yes. Haha. I have acquired a new bunker.
You're out digging the gardens so that you can put in the reinforced walls.
You see, the government found me in the last in my last hideout, so I had to go change to a new, bigger hideout, farther away from the big city lights, and they can't find me out here. I'm out in the wilderness. It's great.
Oh, well, what's even better is that you and your husband are now living together on your own, like proper grown-ups.
Like proper grown-ups after 2 years.
I'm sure it's very different, very, very pleasant.
Yeah, we were originally living in Dublin, which the renting situation in Dublin is horrific. So we had to share with folks, even though we have two very well done jobs, like we have good jobs and that, we couldn't afford to live in Dublin anymore. But now we've gone down the country and have a really nice big ass house to ourselves, and it's almost echoey in here.
Yeah, you're a culty again.
Yeah, back to my roots.
Okay, so, well, this puts you in a very good position for this week's theory, because it's quite involved. There's a lot of research and there's a lot of different films. This isn't just kind of one media franchise that we're focusing in on here. This is kind of an all-encompassing thing, because we are going to be talking about disaster films.
Yeah, buddy.
Do you have a favourite disaster film?
You know The Day After Tomorrow?
Yes.
With Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yes.
I don't know why. It's a terrible movie, but for some reason I'm like, yes, this is a great movie, and I also really like Jake Gyllenhaal in it. So.
Yeah, well, he does very convincingly run away from the cold that is chasing him. The spectral hand of the ice chasing him around a ship, and also wolves.
Also, it's cold out here, and the wolves after me.
Okay, yeah, that's a decent enough pick for a favourite disaster film. It's not the worst one you could have picked, ultimately. The person that I actually contacted with regards to this theory, in order to get some idea of the science behind it, is your friend and mine, Jesse, who has geology qualifications and environmental science qualifications, and gave me a lot of information behind all of the weird inaccuracies in disaster films. You know, things like volcanoes don't behave like that. An earthquake would never happen in that particular geographical location. That kind of thing.
Have you watched the new Jurassic Park? Not the New World?
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Yeah, I have. It's on my list.
When Chris Pratt is lying about 2 inches away from hot molten lava and isn't on flames.
Even worse, the dinosaur that is hunting those two humans gets hit by a trickle of lava and keeps trying to attack them.
Like, if you got hit with real lava, you would literally be a ball of flames. If the lava even got close enough to get to you, as the heat, even from miles away, would be so intense, you would, like, sizzle just being in anywhere near it or close to it.
Exactly. And listen,
that would always annoy me.
You see, this is why Threads is my favourite disaster film.
Ding, 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 ding. To get a bell for every time you mention Threads.
I have invested in one. It's in the post. But, like, at the very least, that kind of acknowledges where the actual science is coming from and things that could actually happen. But as well as that, like, it's not a natural disaster. It's an unnatural disaster. But my theory is that all of the disasters in disaster films, they're not natural disasters. They are also unnatural disasters, because every single one of them is caused by kaiju.
By kaiju. kaiju as in like Godzilla and stuff.
Godzilla, Rodan, Mothra, Baragon, Dagara, Manda, Ghidorah, Megalon, Dagara, all of them.
I am so intrigued.
Well, the one I really wanted to focus here on is I assume because your husband is a Godzilla fanatic.
Yes, he absolutely loves Godzilla and, like, in particular, the very, very old Godzilla. With the black and white guy in a rubber suit, Godzilla. He loved it. And I think he says that he always cries at the end of it. It's the only film he ever cried at. And I'm like, you poor sweet baby, that's adorable.
Listen, I'm a massive fan of all of the Godzilla films as well. There's something about kaiju I just really, really like. Just massive forces of nature that are not beholden to humans. So they do what they want, kind of thing. But in the latest one in particular, King of the Monsters, they sort of confirmed what we've seen in like some of the older films, and that Rodan actually does live inside a volcano, just hanging out there for the crack. And that got me thinking that probably the most scientifically accurate film that portrays a volcano would be Dante's Peak. They tried.
There was a solid attempt with like the acid lake and the ash and stuff, but still.
No, they had at one point they had a truck driving over a stream of magma, and the tires on that truck got ever so slightly melty. As the lava was flowing down the mountain, all of the trees were still standing. And it hit a log cabin the way a river would, but it didn't set the log cabin on fire. And at one point, you actually see them driving away successfully from a pyroclastic flow. Actually, it's the pyroclastic flow is probably the real kicker here because, for one thing, it's averages out about 600 to 700 degrees. And that's not lava at all. This is hot rock fragments, gases, really superheated pre-eruption molten rock, and steam from any water that's present. And it can travel up to about 160 kilometers an hour. You cannot outrun it.
I didn't realize it was that fast, because when you see it in disaster movies like Magma and that, it's always this slow creep. I didn't realize it was that fast. Wow.
Is that's why all of the figures in Pompeii, that's why they're stuck in the positions they are. It moved in on them so fast they couldn't react. And what happens is, if you do breathe this in, even if it wasn't as hot as it actually is, it turns to cement in your lungs. Yeah, it's a pretty unpleasant way to die, but at least it's fast. But what's really funny is, a couple of years back, one of my favorite ever documentary makers, Werner Herzog, back in I think it was the late 70s or the early 80s, he made a film called La Soufrière, where he went to an island that had an erupting volcano in order to film the volcano, and he nearly got himself and his entire camera crew killed. But here's the thing, in that documentary, you never even see a hint of lava because the danger is not with the lava. By the time the lava is making its way down the mountain, you should be long gone. But there was so much toxic smoke and ash coming down from the mountain. There wasn't a pyroclastic flow at that point when he was filming, but every time he got even closer to the mountain, the smoke and the fog just kept getting thicker and thicker. It disabled the engine in the car. They were going around filming to see if there was anybody left on the island because everyone had evacuated. There were two people still on the island. One guy said he'd stayed to look after the animals that had been abandoned, and the other guy just said, "Well, I think this is a good time for me to die, so
God.
I'm just gonna stay here and let it happen." Now, as it turns out, everybody just moved back to the island after the eruption was over. Nobody was actually killed by it.
Well, that's lucky. That's something at least.
Yeah, but he never even got close to that mountain. He never got a sniff of lava. All you ever saw was the smoke coming off the mountain, and that in itself was dangerous enough.
It's like going that close to it, you would. it would be too hot. Like, I remember when I was very, very small, we went over to Lanzarote, which is on a huge volcano itself.
It's on several volcanoes. It's like 130 volcanoes.
We were able to go up to the top of one of them where they had this restaurant on it.
Yes, I know the one you're talking about.
Sorry?
I know the one you're talking about. I've been there.
And you can literally look down and see actual lava. And that was so hot, it burnt my eyebrows. So there was like 7-year-old Circa just looking down going, my face is melting. And it's that I actually got to see real lava and it was so cool. But my gosh, even going near it was so, so hot. I don't know how anybody would be able to get as close to it as they would lead you to believe in some films, considering my eyebrows took ages to grow back after.
Yeah, and see, that was, I think it was a dormant or an extinct volcano, yeah. So it was never in any danger of actually erupting. It was dead, more or less. But like that, I mean, in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, you have a character that is strapped to an apparatus and then lowered into a pit of lava. And you have to assume that if they've built a society around it, this is an extinct or a dormant volcano as well. But she could have never gotten as close as she did to the lava without bursting into flames.
Yeah.
So it's that's another instance of it. But while I was talking to Jesse about this, usually the pyroclastic flow, it happens because there's been a massive buildup of pressure in what they call a subduction zone. So it's kind of like if you get too many things layered on top of each other and there's a load of gas building up behind it. I hate to say it, but kind of like a pimple.
An earth pimple.
Yeah, it is basically. Sure, there's a reason why they call pimples craters. But all of the steam and the gases just build up behind this one section and then explodes outwards. And that's where you get the pyroclastic flow from. And then the rush of lava, it's all this pressure has just kind of forced it out. And now that's running magma usually. And then as it progresses down the mountain after coming out of the cone shape, because the cone shape actually does then tend to be very thin. What Jesse said to me is that the volcanoes in Hawaii don't react the same way because there's a lot of fissures in the rock. So all those gases tend to escape before they become dangerous. But what happens in really explosive volcanic eruptions is that there's a very thin opening, so it all rushes out.
Like a bottleneck.
Exactly, like a bottleneck. That's what I'm trying to say. But usually the magma that comes out of that then is very, very runny and it moves kind of like a river until it gradually gets cooler and then it gets thicker and chunkier. It's chunky. Yeah, it starts moving slowly because it's turning back into rock. So in a lot of disaster films, you see the chunky lava flowing everywhere. It got really egregious, actually, in the film Volcano, where they were we didn't realize that there's a volcano under Los Angeles. Oh no, it's exploded. What do we do? That's free-flowing lava, and it's fairly chunky, but they stop it with concrete roadblocks.
And sandbags
and dropping water onto it, even though the steam coming up off of that lava would feck up your helicopter so badly that you would crash and fall into the lava.
I always remember that scene from Volcano with the guy.
Yeah,
dog or a child.
No, yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
He could have easily made that jump, but he decided, you know what, YOLO, and just jumped into it. And the really slow descent. He didn't burst into flames or anything.
No, he did the Wicked Witch of the West. He died the way the Wicked Witch of the West died. So, oh, what a world, what a world. They're melting.
Oh my god, Volcano was just the worst. Like, the inaccuracy of it, where they redirected lava with, like, roadblocks, and just everything about that was hilariously bad. It was like the Room of disaster movies. Oh, God. I prefer Dante's Peak, because at least Pierce Brosnan gives it a fair bash, but my God.
Yeah, I mean, they do a couple of unexpected things with it, even when they're kind of... They have an actual pyroclastic flow in that, even though it's moving a hell of a lot slower than a normal one would. But here is where my... Huh?
The water in Dante's Peak is a lot more accurate as well, where the pH went up really high to make it acidic. That happens as well with all the sulfur and stuff.
Yeah, but it never gets that acidic. It never gets to the point where it's sulfuric acid, you know? But this is where the kaiju were coming into this, okay? So the fact that the lava in these disaster films is not hot enough to do the things that normally that kind of lava would do means that there is something in there, in that volcano, that is keeping the temperature cool enough that it's not life-threatening to the same degree as it normally would be, but that it's still really melty. And that factor is Rodan. So Rodan hanging out in a volcano, doing his usual thing. Apparently, it has been proven in certain films that Rodan has laid eggs in there and has hatched them in there. But it just seems to be a thing with kaiju that they pop up every now and then, and the rest of the time they're just kind of laying dormant and minding their own business. So I assume they have hibernation cycles. Now, like when you're relaxing in a hot tub and you move from one section of the hot tub to the other, you displace a lot of water and it slops out over the side. So the volcanic eruptions in these films, are Rodan maybe turning over in his sleep or deciding to leave and go through the center of the earth to find another volcano to hang out in rather than staying in that one? I don't know. Maybe it's like moving from the sofa to the bed for them.
He has a series of tunnels leading to all of these other disaster areas.
But they prove that in the latest films that there's a hollow earth and there's the earth is full of tunnels that the kaiju go through in and out. That's how Godzilla went from the shores of San Francisco to the Arctic Circle in order to go fight Ghidorah. Yeah, so you have to kind of assume that most of the kaiju know how to do this. Rodan knows how to do this. Because Rodan, when he does actually get out of the lava to fly, causes massive winds and destruction wherever he goes. So you'd assume it'd actually probably be handier for him to just kind of go subterranean. And he's not the only one that tunnels. Baragon also is a tunneler. And he breeds fire, so he's resistant to fire, possibly made of fire to a certain degree as well, as is Rodan, because when he hops out of the volcano, you can see little veins of magma literally coming off of his wings. So?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a Pokemon. Sorry.
No, a little bit, but the way I kind of see it is, they're both reptiles, so... If they're like regular reptiles, they're not really. But if you're trying to ground us in some sort of biology, you'd think they're cold-blooded. But to an extreme degree, because they have so much blood. And the way I compared this to is, this is a really weird tangent to go off of, but when you're working with chocolate...
Okay.
Yeah, because I work with chocolate when I'm making patisserie and stuff like that. There's a very fine line when you're melting chocolate between when it's kind of nice and melty and silky, and when it's like that, it'll dry and it'll be really shiny and glossy and beautiful. Or when you get to like 1 degree higher and the fat starts to separate and your chocolate gets all clumpy and horrible. So you have to do a thing called tempering, where you melt 2/3 of your chocolate, then immediately take it off the heat and pour in more chocolate to bring the temperature down so that that chocolate will still melt, but the rest of it won't separate. So this is like with this lava, there's a threshold there in that Rodan being in the volcano means that the lava is still hot enough to be melted, but it's significantly less hot than the lava that you'd normally get from a normal volcanic explosion. Is this making any sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. So he's kind of keeping it at the sweet spot.
Yes, he's a temperature regulator, essentially. So that when he moves out of that volcano to go to another volcano, the displacement causes something to happen. Either it cools down completely and just becomes solid rock, or he slops out a load of the lava, and that's when the disaster happens. That's when you get, a sudden rush of magma in places that normally wouldn't have a sudden rush of magma. It's literally caused by the fact that he decided he was going to move somewhere within the space of 500 years.
I had an idea of like the real explosive eruptions that you see. Is that just Rodan having a sneeze?
Maybe.
He's just curled up and he's like, achoo! Suddenly destruction.
Kind of thinking about like what the all of the toxic gases and smoke and ash that would normally turn your lungs to cement, what does it do to Rodan? I maybe thought that he's able to breathe it, first of all, obviously, because he's in the volcano, but maybe that he is using it recreationally. Maybe it just, maybe the effect that it has on him is it just gives him a nice buzz.
That brings a whole new meaning to stoned.
Oh God. But what's really funny is that, I mean, there are creatures that have survived inside volcanoes. It's just tardigrades. So you can kind of
No,
think of,
water bears.
yeah, that's what I mean. Tardigrade is a water bear.
I am not smart. I'm sorry, I just know water bears are immortal. That's all I know.
No, it's okay. Tardigrade is their scientific name, and I know that for reasons. That's
Was it in threads?
it might have been. Threads is the be all and end all and the apex of all of my knowledge. I can
I'm
connect.
sorry.
No, it's okay. Someday we'll play 6 degrees of threads. You can connect every fact back to threads if you try hard enough.
That'll be an hour-long special or a 2-hour-long special.
Oh,
But anyhow,
where
sis.
we pick topics out of a hat and I somehow managed to connect it back to threads?
Yes, I think we should definitely do
Can we get drunk?
that. Anywho.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so moving on. So you kind of imagine that kaiju biology is probably quite similar to a tardigrades, in that they're just very, very resistant to the things that would normally be deadly in anybody else, but it's just on a massive, massive, massive scale. Also, I mean, Ghidorah's an alien. Who's to say that the rest of them aren't aliens and they just decided to roost on Earth? We don't know that much. I mean, Godzilla himself is nuclear powered.
That's
So,
true, yeah.
yeah, and space is nuclear. So maybe Godzilla never originated on Earth. Maybe he just did come from outer space and just got meticized on Earth, decided that he likes it here, and is just kind of hanging and
This is
defending it.
retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what's really funny? Probably one of my favorite scenes from a Godzilla film is when Mothra is trying to go and fight. She wants to go fight an invading monster. I think it's Mechagodzilla. I don't think it's Ghidorah. But she's like, well, I'm just a moth. I'm not going to be able to do this on my own. So she goes to Monster Island to try and talk to Godzilla. And Godzilla's just like, nah, I don't want to help the humans. They're always mean to me. Rodan agrees with me. Like they had a literal conversation about it where Godzilla and Rodan were sitting in a corner of Monster Island just bitching about how mean humans are.
They were mean to me. I'm not helping them. They bullied me.
It's like, yeah, Rodan would totally agree with that just 'cause Rodan is kind of like that weird backup bully kid who just goes and sides with the person who seems the strongest at that point in time.
He's the muscle.
No, he's not even the muscle. He's not strong enough to be the muscle. He's a toady.
I was kind of think of like, Crabbe and Goyle from Dr and Draco Malfoy, that they're just behind them pretending to be intimidating.
Oh no, I would say he's more like Gretchen Wieners from Mean Girls with the three-way phone calls.
Yes, I love it. Did you hear that, Godzilla? The humans said you were mean to them. Oh,
Mothra, they said
trying
nobody.
To get the shit post.
Mothra, they said that nobody likes you because you're such a whore.
Anytime there's a lamp, it just Mothra has to go to it.
Okay, moving very swiftly on.
Very swiftly onwards. I'm sorry, I'm in a mood.
No, that's okay. I am as well. I've been kind of unwell for the last couple of days, and I'm recovering, so my head is still a little bit kind of, which has probably got a lot to do with where this theory came from. Now, another thing Jesse said to me actually is that a disaster. The definition of a disaster is a hazard plus society. So a natural disaster happening somewhere where there isn't society, it's just a hazard. You know, it's not doing any harm. It does its thing and then it fades into the background. But because there's society involved, that's what turns it into a disaster. So you could imagine, like, if there was no humans on the planet, kaiju would be having a great time doing whatever they want. But it does seem like they spend an awful lot of time trying to either kill the humans or just escape detection from the humans. They just don't want to be bothered, really. So this is why they do so much of their dealings either under the ocean, out in space, or in underground.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And on really isolated islands.
If I wasn't a human, I wouldn't want to interact with humans either.
Yeah, I mean, you'd want to interact with your giant monster kin.
Floating around in space.
Yeah. Well, to move on to kind of another disaster, the film Twister.
Oh my god. I was so afraid of that movie when I was a child.
Aww.
Like, I had this innate fear of, like, earthquakes, volcanoes, and twisters when I was younger, that this was my big fear as a child. You know, some people are afraid of ghosts and stuff. I was like, natural disasters. And Twister was the one that set it off for me.
Oh, wow.
It just terrified me when I was younger, that I used to go to bed at night hoping that, like, somebody would put an imaginary bubble around my house in case a natural disaster happened and we'd all be fine. And, yeah.
What if it brought you to Oz?
Well, it depends on what side of Oz I'm on, you know. The Munchkins look vaguely sinister, so I don't know how I'd feel.
You'd become one of the witch's flying monkeys.
That's even worse. Oz is quite, like, dark when you look into it, so I don't know how I feel about ending up in Oz.
No, probably one of the most egregious things about the film Twister is the characters at the very end, when they tie themselves to the ground and then they survive being passed over by the Twister. When actually in an actual tornado of that size, you'd get shredded by debris. It's not the wind that'll kill you. It's all the things that the wind has picked up.
Yeah, there would be even tiny bits of, like, wood or metal would go straight through you so quickly.
Completely, yeah. That's what breaks up all their houses as well. It is that kind of thing. The Twister in that film seems remarkably clean. It picks up a cow at one point. But the rest of the time, they seem relatively clean. It won't even pick up those metal balls that they tried to kind of put in as sort of a pattern detecting thing with those. Now, that was based on a true machine that they tried to do to try and predict those weather patterns. But it never worked because those balls were too heavy. But the fact that it, like, it wouldn't pick up a cow and have the cow just kind of floating in the earth there. Now, the other hurricane film, the only one I could really think of at the point when I was writing the notes for this is Sharknado.
Yes, I absolutely love that movie. What utter ridiculousness.
Completely. Do you know, it's hilarious that it has managed to be more accurate than two other films that I've discussed on this podcast with regards to sharks and hurricanes.
Oddly enough, would Sharknado be a kaiju in and of itself?
No, because there is a reason those sharks are being picked up, and I'm going to tell you now. So Twisters, the smaller ones, they do actually have a tendency to pick up frogs and fish in particular. So used to get all those stories where there'd be a sudden rain of frogs or fish just dropping randomly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just the high winds have picked them up because they're quite light. And water spouts tend to be a lot more common than actual hurricanes. And this is another thing that I learned from Jessie, who was an absolute wealth of information on this entire topic. Someday we're going to get her into the bunker so that she can do a proper theory with us. But she told me, an actual hurricane is somewhere around 500 kilometers in width. But that's the kind of hurricanes that we get in Ireland, where it's you wouldn't really notice that it's a hurricane. It's just a very strong wind.
A storm.
Yeah, exactly. And a twister is usually between 1 and 2 kilometers. So what happens is the bigger the wind is, the weaker it is. So yeah, so a twister is actually highly concentrated. So this is where it gets the power to kind of pick up frogs and fish and debris and toss them around.
It's
That's
like a whirlpool, but in air.
yeah, exactly. That's how all of that works. Now, in King of the Monsters, there was a whole bunch of tropical storms that people looked at them and said, "That's moving too fast to be a storm." And of course, it wasn't actually a storm, it was Ghidorah. Yeah.
I see where
So,
this is going.
yeah, so Ghidorah is able to generate his own weather patterns. All right, and we see him casting lightning and we see him forming clouds. Now, there's a cloud called a cumulonimbus cloud, which is the biggest cloud that you can get. It's usually when you look outside and you can't see a scrap of blue sky anywhere. That's a cumulonimbus cloud. And a lot of Ghidorah's clouds tend to be that because he's inside them. He's hanging out there. So, like, in the point in King of the Monsters is they found him encased in ice. We don't know how long he's been there. But he's obviously been a fixture on Earth for a while because there's ancient cave paintings about him. He came down from space just to kind of hang out, cause a bit of havoc. But then the times when he's not causing havoc, you'd have to imagine he'd get hungry. So, Twister's picking up frogs and fish. Maybe he got hungrier, decided to spread out a little bit, picked up a cow.
Picked up some sharks.
Picked up some sharks. He was already at the ocean picking up some fish, decided to extend his strength a little bit more, picked up a whole bunch of sharks, but then he lost control of the tornado because he didn't anticipate the effect that the sharks were going to have on that tornado.
Cause inertia.
Completely. So you'd have to imagine he has a certain amount of control over his tornadoes and the things that they pick up. And if he's got the power to generate his own lightning, you might imagine that he'd have some sort of say over magnetic fields. Would you? So he'd,
Electricity would.
yeah, so he doesn't pick up metal shards. So the people tying themselves to the ground and floating around in the hurricane going, "Oh, this is amazing. What a great thing for science that we have managed to survive this hurricane and not getting pelted by a load of nails." I mean, they're alive by the grace of Ghidorah. But
I'm
then,
just picturing now, it would have been such a much better film if a fish had just slapped one of them. It just caught up in the twister and was like, boom.
I mean, you can extend it a little bit further out then and say, Storm in the X-Men is, she's not generating any of her own winds. She has a psychic connection to Ghidorah, and Ghidorah is just kind of throwing her a bone.
There is a whole another theory we could do linking the two of them because Cyclops is technically doing the Godzilla mouth roaring thing with his eyes. We could do a whole thing on this. It's
Okay.
all coming together. I'm running out of red string. It's just.
Okay, yeah, I mean, we're not going to talk about X-Men now because we'll be here forever, but it's just a thing like being able to control weather patterns. That's an awfully weird thing for a mutant to suddenly develop. But if she's got some sort of psychic link to Ghidorah that she is somehow unaware of, because of the nature of Ghidorah's thoughts cannot be perceived by man, that he just generates these weather patterns for her because he likes her. I don't know. But
I agree. I buy into this theory.
Yeah. But it like a thing that was pointed out to me about Twister by Jesse that I didn't notice before is that a lot of the Twisters when they happen are sort of heralded in by the main character is going to eat at a diner or picking up coffee in a diner. So, Ghidorah's hungry. And there's also the fact that the little metal balls that they're trying to toss up into the wind to detect the weather patterns, they don't work until they make them little helicopter wings out of Coke cans. So
the Coke cans, they wouldn't be able to be magnetized, would they?
No, well, they're tin. Yeah. As far as I know, they don't really work on that. But, you know, maybe Ghidorah was thirsty, saw that they had Coke cans and said, oh, this is great, they're leaving me some Coke, and then just got really disappointed.
I would love to see the very first time that Ghidorah happened to come across Coke, and it was like, trying to open it with his wind powers. Yeah, I'm just having very weird thoughts in my head now. He did a storm around a Coca-Cola factory and got a taste for it.
Yeah, completely. And I'm sure he'd probably, like, eat the can and all. Because you can imagine his core is superheated because he managed to survive being frozen in ice. A whole bunch of the kaiju, Manda as well, survived being frozen in ice. And was perfectly fine once the ice thawed. So you have to imagine they have a core that's heated to a degree that they can survive that kind of thing. And speaking of Manda, by the way, who we don't see very often in the films, he pops up every now and then, but he's an ocean-dwelling kaiju. We can stretch this theory out to include Titanic, as in the Titanic film, not the actual event, because if we were making the actual event about this, it would be incredibly disrespectful to the people that died. But the film Titanic was a fictionalized story that took place on that Titanic, so we can say that's an alternate Titanic that never actually happened.
There was even a rapping dog on it.
Yes. And not to mention getting stuck in Atlantis with a whole bunch of toys.
For anyone that doesn't get that reference, there is an animated version of Titanic that is absolutely horrendous. And for some reason, they have an animated dog that walks, talks and raps in it. The good old classic Titanic. So
yeah, it's party time.
Oh God almighty.
But you know, there's not actually just that Titanic. There is another animated Titanic which is just as bad. It has an octopus, like a giant octopus with a dog's face that saves the Titanic from sinking.
Oh, that's I just want to know why. I want to find whoever made it and just ask why. But moving along, how on earth would the Titanic movie be brought into this?
Okay, so the sea path that the Titanic was moving down originally, it was established there for a very long time. Remember we talked in The Terror about them trying to forge a sea path in order to find a new passage to India?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, those guys, they got into trouble because that part of the ocean hadn't been properly explored before. They'd no idea what was going to happen. By the time the Titanic was sailing, the path that they were taking was well established. They knew where they were going. But the problem was, there is a once-in-a-hundred-years event that caused an extra bunch of icebergs to happen in that particular stretch of water. There is a river in Canada that had frozen over, and a whole bunch of these big ice floes just got knocked off of the actual river path and flowed into the sea. So that's why the iceberg that they crashed into was there in the first place. Now, okay, Manda travels around an awful lot. You could imagine if he got into an underwater scrap with another kaiju, the resulting underwater tension might have knocked a couple of icebergs clear. And if it happens only once every 100 years, maybe that's part of his migration path.
Knocking out iceberg chips.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to, we can blame him for what happened in The Terror. And we can say man bear pig is a much, much lesser kaiju.
This is just connecting to way too many other theories. It's sprawling.
Well, there's so many disaster films. I mean, the Poseidon Adventure.
A perfect storm.
Yeah, absolutely. 2012.
Oh my God, that's such a bad movie.
Okay, yeah, none of the science in that film makes any sense at all. It's fun to
Oh no.
watch if you want to see things getting broken up, but you can imagine that the combination of all these things, massive high winds, things freezing, sudden fissures in the earth where those fissures had never been before, entire continents getting submerged, like all of that, you're thinking maybe it's a territorial fight between kaiju underneath the surface.
They're having a tournament arc.
Oh, gotcha. An underwater, underground tournament arc. Or
They're just having a good old, like, it's the Kaiju Olympics. They're
it's
just
kaiju West Side
fighting.
Story. Oh, sorry, but could you imagine Godzilla doing the opening dance from West Side Story? Do 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 do.
That would just be majestic. Oh my God. With his
Because
little tap shoes.
if he did a high kick, he would knock part of the continent of South America just off the surface of the But, like, if you can imagine, do you know the way when you're cleaning your house and you disrupt a spider because you're sweeping up cobwebs or something like that? If you found a cobweb in a corner of the house that is normally not accessible to you. Like, to you, you're just cleaning up, but to the spider, you've destroyed their house. Like, and normally you'd be so big. Like, I read this in a scientific magazine that it was kind of a thing that said, do spiders recognize humans? But they said that because we are so large compared to them, they actually can't comprehend us. We're like mountains. And they perceive our movements. They see us almost as if we're moving in slow motion. All right, so we're like that for kaiju. You know, they just go about and live their lives, and they have no idea of the kind of impact that they are causing us because they're just doing their thing.
That's kind of fascinating, actually. I never thought of it like that.
Yeah, like, and I
That's
mean,
cool.
yeah, it's, I mean, every now and then the kaiju will acknowledge humans. Mothra has a very good friendship with her humans. So does Manda, because he's the protector of a particular branch of society. The rest of the time, the kaiju just don't really acknowledge the humans, unless the humans are trying to go after them. But I mean, that's like the likes of me and you running from scorpions.
In Animal Crossing.
Yeah. I just yeah, there's no scorpions in Ireland, luckily. As far as I know, I think Ireland is too wet and windy for any of the really dangerous animals.
Yeah, I think the closest we have to anything that's particularly dangerous is the false widow spider. But even at that, if that did like bite or sting you, it would just hurt. It wouldn't actually, it's not deadly unless you have a underlying condition.
Yeah, and they're not native species to
No, they're
this
not.
country, so we don't actually have any poisonous native species, as far as I know. I could be wrong about this, but listen, it's the advantage of living on a tiny little rocky island is that we escape a lot of this stuff. Maybe the kaiju really like Ireland, and that's why we don't have many natural disasters.
We have our own kaiju.
Well, who?
St. Patrick got rid of all the snakes.
St. Patrick's not a kaiju.
He's a kaiju in my heart.
Now, St. Patrick would be the equivalent of those two little fairy girls in the clamshell that talk to Mothra. So, you know, maybe he was in contact somehow with one of the more snake-like of the kaiju.
This is getting weird.
This started out weird. You know,
Apologize.
it hasn't gotten weirder. It just started weird, and it just sort of has kept going on that very weird thread for the longest time. I think I've actually gotten through my notes, and I cannot, off the top of my head, think of any other disaster films that we can cram in there.
I tend to avoid a lot of disaster movies because they're so ridiculous. Like, I've watched a good amount of them, but I also, like, I wouldn't be the first person in line in the cinema to go see another disaster movie, especially since, like, some of the CG is particularly bad. Like, if you go back and look at some of the 2012 CG,
oh, yeah.
Oh, it's bad.
I don't know. I always think it's kind of amusing to see, like, national landmarks get destroyed. Not in real life, obviously, but just kind of on a film. And you can tell that that was the intention behind the film, is just that that director just really likes seeing, there's the White House. Oh, now it's gone. There's the Eiffel Tower. Oh, now that's gone too.
You always see that in all of those movies, that the White House is the first thing to go.
Yeah.
Like, especially with, like, Independence Day and stuff. It's like, why the White House? There's so many other places they could have went.
But, you know, the last part of this theory I had is the ultimate kaiju.
Oh, no.
Katamari. Okay, so for listeners who are not familiar with Katamari is a very fun video game where you play as the Prince of the Cosmos, who is this tiny little creature whose father, the King of all Cosmos, got really drunk one night and accidentally blew up all of the stars. So he sends his son to Earth with this tiny little sticky ball and tells him to roll up as many things on top of that ball as he can until he can recreate a star. So he gives the Katamari with all the stuff stuck onto it to his dad. His dad blows it up and it becomes a star. But you start off in a person's house and you're only the size of an ant. And you're rolling up little things that you find in the house, like thumbtacks and coins and biscuit crumbs. And then frogs and spiders and butterflies. You get slowly bigger until the point you're rolling up people and animals. And then then cars and trucks and buses and then giant squid and other kaiju. You get big enough that you start rolling up kaiju. There's usually, when you're rolling up, once you've gotten to the size that you're building size and you're starting to roll up buildings, you see kaiju hanging around, fighting other kaiju or just kind of hanging out. And you can roll up them too. And there is nothing they can do to stop you.
It's such a fun game. You can get it on the Switch. And
it is my favorite game. I am on my knees crying to Namco to release We Love Katamari, which was the sequel to the first game and is a glorious game in its own right. I have played the Switch game so many times, I cannot play it anymore because I keep just getting the same score. There's no further I can get. I want the second one and the third one and the fourth one to come out already. I want them to make a new one. It is my favourite game of all time.
It's so therapeutic. Like, you wouldn't think it, but as you're playing it, just seeing the destruction you're causing, and then as you're rolling up people, you can see, like, their little legs wiggle and stuff.
And you hear them scream.
You can hear them scream. And you just start taking up mountains and, like, all natural wildlife and stuff just in this giant chunky ball, and it is so therapeutic.
Yes.
If I was a kaiju, I would definitely be like Katamari, I think.
But yeah, the country that the world that Katamari is rolling up is, obviously it's not our planet, it's considerably blockier than our planet. But if Katamari ever made its way to our universe, it would take out Godzilla, it would take out Ghidorah, it would take out Rodan, it would take out everything. It is the ultimate kaiju.
Meanwhile, in our universe. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think I have pushed this theory as far as I can possibly push it. Do you have anything to add?
It's been a magical episode. And I'm sorry, I've been in a really weird mood. I do apologize.
No, it's okay. We've both been that. I think that's just the general malaise of kind of life in this almost lockdown lifted time. Is that we're all kind of getting back to normal, but we're unsure of what normal is.
Yeah, it's a new normal. It's after a disaster movie.
Actually, yeah, this year has pretty much felt like we're in a disaster film. I wonder what kaiju caused it, though. Like the Australian wildfires, the coronavirus. Who did this to us? Was it Ghidorah? No, there's been no hurricanes, so it couldn't possibly be Ghidorah.
Yet. We are only 6 months into the year yet. We still have another 6 months of the end of days to happen.
That's fair. We might figure out which of the kaiju it is by then.
Stay tuned next time for more reports of disaster. Oh, Lord.
Okay, so thank you once again for listening to another Crackpot Theory if you managed to make it all the way to the end of this very strange episode. We are on Buzzsprout, we are on Spotify, we're on iTunes, we're on pretty much anywhere where you can get good podcasts, bad podcasts, and all the podcasts in between. If you liked what we do, you can leave us a review. It doesn't necessarily have to be a good one. We do take constructive criticism. You can also find us on Twitter, on Tumblr, and sometimes on TikTok. This has been another Crackpot Theory. I've been Sinead.
And
And
I'm Circa.
yeah, that has been Surika. And the truth is out there, and it is much stranger than you think.
And possibly caused by
Yes,
kaiju.
absolutely. Bye.
Bye.